This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. In the midst of a state and federal effort to bring coal back to the booming industry it once was, not everyone is sure they can afford it.
I had to transfer over to gas because the electric heat was running way too high. At one time, I had a $500 bill.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Hope Gas, committed to the growth and development of West Virginia to strengthen the community. Information at wvisforhope.com. Over the past year, camping bans have started popping up at both the local and state level. As Chris Schultz reports, a camping ban bill making its way through the legislature has some Morgantown residents feeling frustrated.
In September, the Morgantown City Council approved a camping ban ordinance that makes it a criminal offense to camp or store personal belongings on public or private property without authorization. But by November, voters successfully petitioned to postpone the ban and put it to a vote on the local ballots April 29th. Now the results of that vote could be superseded by a statewide camping ban making its way through the state legislature. Delegate Gino Chiarelli, a Republican from Monongalia County, is the lead sponsor of House Bill 2382. Chiarelli told West Virginia Public Broadcasting last week that he introduced the bill because the citizens of his district, who mostly live in the county, do not have a say in Morgantown's ordinance. The bill escalates from a warning for the first violation up to a $500 fine for a third violation and even jail time.
Like the local camping bans that have been passed in Morgantown, Wheeling, and other communities over the past year, the statewide camping ban does require that alternate shelter be offered before any criminal penalties can be imposed. But unlike Morgantown, most communities in West Virginia do not have established shelters.
House Bill 2382 passed the House of Delegates March 11th. Thursday night, it was taken up by the Senate Judiciary Committee, where Senator Eric Tarr, a Republican from Putnam County, reintroduced language that would allow law enforcement to offer transportation to violators of the ban.
I think instead of being punished, I think they should be given the alternative to not be punished of accepting transportation to an area outside of West Virginia that has excess capacity for providing services for those experiencing homelessness, need for addiction services, or need for mental health services, giving priority to a location near their home.
According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which conducts a count of people experiencing homelessness annually in January, about 1,800 people were homeless in West Virginia in 2024. Mark Phillips, president and CEO of Catholic Charities West Virginia, told the committee that the majority of the people his organization serves are West Virginians.
It changes from place to place. So places that are a little bit closer to borders, obviously you see more individuals. Most recent statistic I can give you, our emergency winter shelter in Morgantown, 90% of those individuals were from West Virginia.
Tarr's amendment was adopted and the bill was advanced to the full Senate. Brian Buescher represents Morgantown's 7th Ward on the City Council and is the co-lead of West Virginia Housing Justice. The group is organizing events leading up to the April election to get out the vote against the local camping ordinance. Buescher says he wants more frank discussion amongst lawmakers about how to address the material issues of homelessness.
It would be really nice if we could just get back to, you know, working together on solutions that we've identified that really work, and instead of just focusing on this one thing and trying to fight against it or fight about it.
Last summer, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in City of Grants Pass versus Johnson that camping bans do not constitute cruel and unusual punishment. Buescher says there are simpler, more humane actions the government... Buescher says that there are simpler, more humane actions the governments at every level could be taking to address homelessness immediately. They range from creating a housing voucher program, like one recently launched in Pittsburgh, to simply providing better access to basic services.
That's in addition to all the, like, kind of low-hanging fruit that we could be doing, like locker programs, the bathrooms for people outside, to kind of alleviate the immediate things that people are seeing out on the street.
House Bill 2382 is progressing through the Senate, and a camping ban appears likely to become state law before the end of the legislative session April 12th. that would nullify Morgantown's vote April 29th. Leslie Nash is an attorney at Mountain State Justice. She says that prospect is incredibly frustrating, but doesn't make the efforts against the ban futile.
I think us coming out and showing how vehemently we oppose this ordinance is really important to us as a community. I think it's important to folks who are unhoused to see that their neighbors don't agree with this. Like, we do not think this is right, and we're going to do what we can until we are bypassed by our elected representatives who maybe don't care what their constituents think.
The statewide camping ban bill is scheduled to be read a first time in the Senate Monday, March 24th, and could be on the governor's desk next week. For the legislature today, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
Researchers at Mammoth Cave National Park in nearby Kentucky have kept a close count of their bat populations for decades and have ramped up those efforts since the emergence of the debilitating white nose syndrome in 2012. One species of the flying creature has defied the odds, putting up a fight against the fungal disease. WKU Public Radio reporter Derek Parham brings us the story.
At a remote site in Mammoth Cave National Park, around a 40-minute drive from the busy visitor center, biologists with the Cumberland Piedmont Network are searching for a rare species of bat that could hold the secret to warding off the notorious white nose syndrome.
All right, I'll follow you.
Raffinesque's big-eared bats are one of very few species that have shown an immunity to the fungal disease that has decimated bat species globally. They're rare throughout most of the U.S. and endangered in some states. But at Mammoth Cave, researcher Rick Toomey says their population has thrived.
If you're driving home on park and the sun's starting to go down, you may see bats flying along the road. Those are almost always Raffinesque's big browns and reds.
Normally, white nose pulls bats out of hibernation and forces them to use vital fat reserves, leading to starvation and death. While spores of the fungus that caused the disease have been found on the fur and wings of Raffinesque's, researchers still don't know why the disease hasn't impacted them in the same way it has for the once common northern long-eared bat.
That's one of four species that have really been hit the hardest on this park by white-nose syndrome. So, and that's the one that's been hit the worst. It's like 99% decline.
Steve Thomas is a biologist with the Cumberland Piedmont Network. He's been leading bat research across the country for over 30 years and says the northern long-eared bat and the little brown bats are two species that have been hit hardest at Mammoth Cave, with the little brown seeing more than a 95% decline.
I remember one cave on the park. We used to see between 500 and 700 of them, and now it's down to six. That's the last time I counted there.
That's just six individual bats left after the colony was struck by an outbreak of white nose syndrome. To find out the secret of the Raffinesque's immunity, the researchers have split their population counts into two groups.
We have caves that Raffinesque big-eared bats hibernate in, and then we have a whole separate set of caves that what we call Myotis hibernate in.
Myotis caves house bats that have seen drastic population declines from white nose syndrome. Researchers check those caves during even years and non-Myotis caves in odd years. Once we're inside the cave, conversation is hushed to avoid disturbing the sleeping bats.
There's a couple different species, because we've got big brown bats over there, but these are all Raffinesque. So you can see some of the ears sticking out.
Clusters of Raffinesques huddled together on the ceiling and walls of the hidden cave, staying dry together despite the damp environment. To get a rough count, Steve uses a click counter and takes a photo of each cluster to get a more accurate count later on. Inside the cave, researchers found just over 200 of the immune bats cuddled together, sleeping peacefully. Their bodies are around 3 inches long, and from tip to tip, their wingspan is around 10 inches.
Most of them have their ears curled back, but several of them have at least one ear sticking out.
Just inches from where the bats sleep, a small device hangs, collecting the changing temperature and humidity over 2 years. Steve says that information is essential to knowing the bats' preferred environments.
Let's say they decline. We don't know necessarily why they're declining or the numbers are going down, but one reason could be that there's been a change in the environment in the cave.
This year's count shows that the Raffinesque population has remained steady at Mammoth Cave. With that knowledge and ongoing research, biologists are one step closer to bringing other species back from the brink. I'm Derek Parham in Bowling Green.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:54. Rain this morning, clearing in the afternoon with gusty wind, highs in the 50s and 60s, partly cloudy overnight with lows in the 30s and 40s. Tomorrow, cloudy skies with a chance of rain, highs in the 50s. Support for WVPB is provided by Hope Gas, providing information on natural gas safety education like how to spot a gas leak by sight, sound, and smell. Information at hopegas.com. With President Donald Trump back in office, fossil fuels are again at the forefront of the nation's energy policy. Trump posted on social media just over a week ago calling for more energy production with, quote, beautiful clean coal, prompting interaction from West Virginia's governor and a senator. Curtis Tate reports those ambitions are far from certain, even in the nation's most coal-reliant state.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, you must be Mary.
Mary West is an Army veteran who lives in Beckley in southern West Virginia's coal field. She used to work in the mines in about 1980 for Ranger Fuel and Pittston Coal in Raleigh County. West called it hard and dangerous work. An injury put an end to her brief career in mining.
I told him I was not going to go back because the Lord hid it underground for a reason and didn't intend for my crazy butt to keep going down there finding it.
Her past in coal isn't obvious when looking at her red brick home. Its roof is lined with solar panels. Most months, she pays nothing for electricity.
When I went with solar, I said, well, you know, God's sun is out every day and his daylight is out.
Coal is deeply embedded in West Virginia's economy, history, and culture. But the cost of coal-generated electricity continues to rise, causing residents like West to shift away from the state's historically prized fuel. Gary Bolin, a disabled Navy veteran who lives on a fixed income, tries to use power sparingly.
I keep my thermostat set at 65, so I don't have a power bill that high.
To lower his costs, Bolin made a change from coal-generated electricity.
I had to transfer over to gas because the electric heat was running way too high. At one time, I had a $500 bill.
Coal used to be the dominant fuel for electricity nationwide, but natural gas overtook it almost a decade ago. Appalachian Power, a utility serving about half of West Virginia, still generates 90% of its electricity from coal. Its rates have climbed faster than inflation, and the company is seeking another increase. Tom Mosley, a retired postal worker, says it would add to what's already a struggle.
Most families in Raleigh County are living to pay bills. They can't go out and enjoy life. They can't go out and spend money at the movies. Every dollar they make is to pay their bills.
President Donald Trump won West Virginia by big margins in the past three presidential elections on promises to boost fossil fuel production, including coal. But coal's promised resurgence hasn't happened yet. With Trump now back in the White House, with industry-friendly appointees at agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, coal supporters are once again talking of a comeback. Chris Hamilton is the president of the West Virginia Coal Association. He says the state is mining about half the coal it was in 2009, with half the workforce.
We think under this new political leadership and with the industries and government working hand in hand, we can get back to that 165 million tons of coal.
Honey May is the West Virginia chapter director for the Sierra Club, which has pushed successfully for the retirement of coal plants. She says coal's days are over, no matter what its supporters say.
It's been over a decade since the last coal plant was put into operation in the United States, and that's something I don't see happening again.
Randall Short is the director of regulatory services for Appalachian Power's parent company, American Electric Power. While testifying to state lawmakers in February, he said the company's three coal plants in West Virginia frequently can't compete with lower-cost gas plants.
It's very hard to get a coal contract that can beat that price.
As costs continue to increase and renewable resources like solar and wind replace it, May struggles to see a path forward for coal's comeback.
There are cheaper, cleaner, faster, more nimble alternatives on the market, and that's what's pushing coal in the downward trend.
For the Appalachia Mid-South Newsroom, I'm Curtis Tate.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Maria Young, and Randy Yowie. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.